I call this meeting of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee to order for the record. It's 1:30 p.m. Thursday, January 30th, 2020. We are in the Thomas Stewart, in the Belts Room of the Thomas Stewart Building, and we have a quorum to do business. Present today are Senators Gray Jackson, Senators Costello, Senator Stevens, and myself, Senator Bishop. Senator Rivak is on his way. He's other state business, but his staff is here, and we're moving forward. So with that being said, I'd like to recognize our staff today. Kari Cooper-Ryder from Senate Records. Good morning. Brett Collins, good afternoon. You see how I did that, just back and forth. And Cody Grusendorf from our office is the committee aide. Cell phones, you know the drill. Today we have SB 50, Employment Tax for Education Facilities, and SB 76, Repeal of the Work Comp Appeals Commission by Senator Wilikowski. Good afternoon, sir. And up first will be Senate Bill 50. This is the third hearing in this committee on this bill. Public testimony was taken on Tuesday, January 28th, 2020. Department of Revenue is online, as the Vice Chair had some questions at the last meeting, or a question, I believe. And Mr. Brandon Spanos is online if you'd like to hear from him and ask your questions, Senator Stevens.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was concerned about the collection of these fees here, and I understand that it's easy enough to do when people are employed and receiving a paycheck, and you can take that money out of their out of their salary. But how is it handled with folks that are self-employed? And I see that there are two agencies that collect these taxes. One is Department of Labor, and the other, I think, is the Department of Revenue, I believe, Mr. Chairman. So the question of the Department of Revenue is, how does that work? I know several Alaskan fishermen who what happens? How do you collect that money if they don't self-report and pay that? How is it going to be collected?
Vice Chair Stevens, this is Brandon Spanos, Deputy Director with the Department of Revenue Tax Division. And the way that it currently works is different than it would work. Right now, the Department of Labor collects unemployment insurance from employers as well as employees. The SB 50 would implement a tax of $30 for each individual. Our fiscal note is for both collecting from employers as well as self-employed. So it would do both. And the self-employment piece, it would require a return of some sort. Right now in Title 43 in the Administrative Code section, it requires electronic filing of any tax return or report. And so unless the SB 50 were to add a paper filing option, it would have an electronic filing requirement. There is an election or an option for somebody who doesn't have the ability to file electronically to get a waiver. But we would expect most employers, or rather self-employed individuals, to file through our revenue online system, and that's a portal that's available for any taxpayer currently to go out. They can register. They can get licenses for any of our tax licenses, like tobacco and alcohol and such, and they can also file tax returns online. And so if you're self-employed, you would log into the system, file the return, and pay your $30 tax.
Thank you, Brandon, Mr. Chairman. I guess the question is, how are you going to make sure this happens, and how are these people even going to know that they have to pay $30 to the state? I think you have a lot of fishermen who come up for a season and return home to wherever, Texas or wherever they are. How are we going to make sure that they in fact pay that $30?
Vice Chair Stevens, we would likely send out notices to anyone that gets a license. So in order to come up and fish, you do need to get a license. In order to do any business as a self-employed individual, you would need to get a business license. And so we could of course, make the available the information available through the Department of Commerce when they get their license, or we could send out a separate notice. The way that we do it currently with, like, marijuana taxpayers, if you're a grower operation and you get a license through AMCO, we will send you a welcome packet that includes information about how to register in our system, how to file a return, how to pay in cash if you're paying in cash, and a bunch of other information. So I would envision a one-page letter or email out to everyone that registers for a license.
I see, Brandon. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And then, notice with everyone has a license. I'm looking. I'm not trying to pick on fishermen; they're my constituents. But $30 is little enough. So those who have a fishing license, everyone on a boat has to have a license, and so that notice would go out to all of them. Would you then, if people ignored that, would you be able to withhold licenses?
So we have, of course, the ability to make assessments and go after taxpayers that aren't paying tax. There is, of course, a cost to that. So I think that we would look at a cost-benefit analysis to determine whether it was in the state's best interest to try to assess and collect. And so there, of course, are... For a one-time taxpayer that comes up and fishes and goes back and then ignores us, there's certainly things we can do, but it would probably cost more than $30 to collect.
Sure, I understand that. That makes sense that you wouldn't get as much back as you expended. But, of course, if that word got out, then nobody would pay you a tax.
Sure. And we've made suggestions of certain options that could be done in the bill, and these are just brainstorming ideas. But there are maybe other options in order to either have the payor withhold the $30, which of course opens up other concerns because you might have multiple payers. Maybe you get 500 payments a year, and now you've had it withheld 500 times. But there are some other options to maybe consider. There's also if you are in arrears, currently the tax administration statutes state that if you are if you're not current on your taxes, that your licenses in the state are suspended. So we have taken action before where maybe we have a corporation that isn't paying tax, and we notify Department of Commerce and we share that statute and say this corporation hasn't paid tax. Their license needs to be suspended, and they will follow up with them on that. So it is possible to suspend a fisherman's license if they're not going to pay the $30.
Thank you, Brandon, and I appreciate your comments. And, Mr. Chairman, I'm perfectly comfortable with this. It's an issue that I think finance might want to deal with to make sure that there is some kind of a way to suspend licenses if these taxes aren't paid. But I also understand that it may not be worth spending a lot of money to collect $30. Still, you don't want the word to get out that we're not going to follow through on these things.
Right. Thank you for Brandon. Any more comments or questions for Mr. Spanos while we have him online? Okay. And I agree with you. We'll put any fine tuning at. I have all the confidence in Chair Stedman and Senator Von Imhoff at the finance table and all of us there. There's a way to do it because we did it from 1959 to 1980, and right now, just to further that, the mining industry right now, that you have to check off on two agencies to get your annual mining license each year, and revenue talks to DNR, and they talk back and forth. So there's we can finalize that at the finance committee. So if there's no Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to mention once again that when we had our meeting the other day, I was curious why the Anchorage School Board hadn't weighed in. Mm-hmm. And I said that I would get in contact with them. And I did have a conversation with the board chair, Star Marcette, and she said that she was going to look into it. And I just wanted to let the committee know that I did follow up with the Anchorage School District. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And thanks for that reminder, Senator Gray Jackson, because I've had some people from Anchorage tell me that I think there's going to be something forthcoming from your comments. So Thank you. And Senator Reback is here. He's been here since I said he was on his way, so it's my apologies. But we're fully staffed here. If there's no other discussions on the bill, I'd entertain a motion to move this bill to the next committee referral, which is Senate Finance.
Mr. Chairman, I move CS for Senate Bill 50, Labor and Commerce Version 31-LS0383 /S out of committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Second.
Thank you. Hearing no objections, we're going to take a brief at ease and while we sign the committee packet. Excuse me, we're back on the record. Next up is Senate Bill 76. This is the second hearing of this bill. Last meeting was on Tuesday of this week. Today we have the Department of Labor and a representative from the courts here before the committee today. We will take public testimony today. And for a reminder for committee members, we are working with version M of the bill. First up, I'd like to ask Ms. Nancy Mead from the courts to the table. Ms. Mead, if when you get squared away, would you place yourself on the record, please, and tell us the court's, not your opinion, but the court's opinion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Nancy Mead. I'm the general counsel for the Alaska court system, and thank you for giving the court system an opportunity to talk about the impacts from SB 76. Clearly, if this bill passes, it will increase the caseload for Superior Court judges. But I also want to make clear that the policy decision where these cases are best handled, whether that's within the workers' WCAC, the Appeals Commission, or the court, is certainly, obviously, within your purview. And the judges take whatever cases come to them happily, and we will handle them in due course. That said, there will definitely be impacts to us. We would anticipate, what I'm anticipating, is between 30 and 40 additional appeals from the Workers' Compensation Board that would go to the court rather than going to the commission. It's hard to predict that number exactly. There's historical averages of about 32 or 33 a year. Sometimes when the forum changes, parties decide they want to appeal more often. They might think they have a better chance in court. Sometimes they might think they shouldn't appeal because maybe they don't. So I can't say exactly, but we're saying between 30 and 4 new cases of this sort each year are likely to come our way. So the Superior Court did handle all these types of appeals before 2005 when the legislature changed the jurisdiction and took jurisdiction from the court and instead established this commission. So we do have some experience in this area. So I can say that these types of cases, though they're only 30 or 40, are considered to be some of the most challenging cases for our Superior Court judges. They are more time-consuming than other cases. And that's because, they can take up to 12 to 18 months. I think our average for agency appeals is between 12 and 18 months, and these took right in there. And the reason they take a long time is a few reasons. Workers' compensation law is a unique and somewhat arcane area of law. The records are large. They come from the board in boxes of files. There's a lot of documentation to go through. There are medical records and other things of that nature. Since they're only 30 to 40, each judge on average, if we have 45 judges, would only have one or two extra cases a year. Now, that isn't really accurate because most of the cases will occur in the population centers, namely Anchorage, Juneau, and maybe Fairbanks. And so some of the Anchorage civil judges may get three or four of these cases per year, whereas somebody in one of the more outlying courts might only have one every few years. So obviously we can't say exactly where these cases will go. But because they aren't common, the judges don't develop an expertise in this area. And that brings me to the reason these cases were taken from the court in 2005 was because there was dissatisfaction in the way the court handled them. A, they were taking 12 to 18 months. And B, the court, since the judges weren't subject matter experts in workers' compensation, there was some inconsistency in the decisions. And without consistency, you don't really know what the law is. It remains unsettled until and if somebody appeals those cases to the Alaska Supreme Court. Nevertheless, I mean, I guess I'd say that I can't promise that any of those things will change if you make the policy decision that the courts should take these back. The court does handle other agency appeals. We have about 120 agency appeals a year for the last couple of years, and those might come from Department of Natural Resources or Department of Corrections. Actually, our largest category is probably prisoner appeals from disciplinary decisions. So Superior Court judges handling agency decisions is not in itself unique, but the type is unique. But because we already have a system in place for agency appeals, these would be handled just like those. And that's how they used to be handled. That is, they're spread randomly, assigned randomly to the judge in the court in which they were filed. And there's a briefing schedule, and the judge, again, does handle some agency appeals. So this is not unique. We would not need any new rule types. We would not develop any new forms. So in that regard, we would be efficient at being able to do this. I also want to say that, well, this bill existed in previous legislatures brought forth by the administration, and I worked with the workers' comp folks at that time to ensure that the wording was something that would be workable for everybody, and they were very receptive to that, and the current wording is something that we could accept. So with that, I'd be happy to take questions, and again, I want to make clear that we'll happily take these if given to us.
Senator Greg Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for your testimony. I just have a couple of questions. I think you said that the reason for the commission was because folks were not satisfied with the way they were being handled?
Generally, that's true through the chair.
Okay. Has there been any dissatisfaction with the commission in the way they've been handling cases?
Through the chair to Senator Gray Jackson, I am not the best person to speak to that. I assume this bill was brought because somebody didn't like the way things were happening right now, but that isn't my area of expertise.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, can I follow up with one more question?
Please. And
thank you,
Mr.
Chairman.
The bill sponsor will be up here, and you can ask him that.
Okay.
As well.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And so are you able to estimate what the additional cost will be?
Through the chair to Senator Gray Jackson, we have submitted a zero fiscal note. Okay. And let me explain that a little bit. Our judges are extremely busy, and when a bill has a brand new case type or something that we've never had before and never seen before, we sometimes have fiscal impact from it. We try to be very honest in our fiscal notes. An increased workload doesn't in and of itself result in increased costs because a judge gets the same salary whether they have to work that Saturday or not. They have a flat salary. If something is so brand new that it would require a lot of work and training and forms and rules and an anticipated high number of cases, we sometimes put in a fiscal note because we need to hire temporary staff to get it rolling and temporary judges to handle the incremental increase. But one bill in and of itself with 30 new cases isn't enough to say we need a new judge. And again, since we have a lot of the infrastructure in place, it would be more work without anything I could monetize to put on a fiscal note.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Gray Jackson, Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Ms. Mead. This question is based on my shorthand for Superior Court and Supreme Court, and they both were spelled the same. I can't tell what I was talking about in my notes, Supreme Court or Superior Court. But there is a difference as what we are, where we are now and how it goes through the court system and where we'd be in the future with the passage of this bill, how it goes through the court system. Is it right, then, that now an appeal of the commission goes only to the Superior Court, not to the Supreme Court?
Through the chair to Senator Stevens, let me clarify. Right now, the case starts with the board in Department of Labor, goes to the Workers' Compensation Appeals Commission in the Department of Labor, and then if dissatisfied, a party's appeal goes to the Alaska Supreme Court. So Superior Court judges do not touch these cases now. So in that hierarchy, this bill would substitute Superior Court judges instead of the Workers' Comp Appeals Commission. So it would go Board, Superior Court, Supreme Court.
Thank you. Any other questions for Ms. Mead from the courts here today? Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Dee Ford, Chair of the Work Comp Appeals Commission, and she's online, and we will go to Dee Ford from the Appeals Commission, the board chair. Good afternoon. If you put your name and affiliation title on the record, and please give us your testimony into this bill.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Bishop and committee members. My name is Deithra Ford. I am the chair of the Alaska Workers' Compensation Appeals Commission, and I did not have any prepared testimony because I understood that I was to be available to respond to any questions from the committee.
That's fine. Anybody have questions?
If you would like me to make a statement, I would be happy to do so.
Okay, hang on one second. Does anybody have any questions for the Appeals Commission? What's your opinion, if you've got one, or the Appeals Commission's opinion on this proposed Senate Bill 76?
Okay, let me give you a brief history of who I am. I practiced as an employer's defense attorney before the Alaska Workers' Compensation Board for approximately 20 years. I represented employers and insurers. I then was a hearing officer for 3.5 years, chairing hearings before the Alaska Workers' Compensation Board. I then retired for about 3 years, and I was asked if I would come out of retirement and apply to become chair. I was appointed chair and took office on October 31st, 2016, and I was just recently reappointed by Governor Dunleavy. So I had experience before with appeals to the Superior Court. I did not have experience with appeals to the Commission because by the time that arrived, I had gone to the board and was a hearing officer. So my decisions at the board went to the commission, but I did not personally take an appeal to the commission. I have three concerns about going back to the Superior Court. One is that the commission decisions have precedential value, and this gives some finite parameters to both employees and employers as to how the board should handle disputes. As Ms. Mead mentioned, there were often inconsistencies with the Superior Court decisions, and since they had no precedential value, the employee or the employer, if a similar issue came up a second time, did not have to abide by what the Superior Court had decided in the preceding, in a different case. They could argue the same issue all over again, both before the board and to the Superior Court. When the commission issues a decision on a particular issue, that decision applies across the board to the board and to other commission decisions, unless and until the Supreme Court decides that a different way of looking at the law should be undertaken. The commission is obligated to get a decision out in 90 days from the completion of briefing or oral argument, whichever is later. It's my understanding that Superior Court judges have 6 months from that date to issue or to at least get a decision in writing. My third concern has to do with how self-represented litigants might be handled before the Superior Court. The clerk of the commission does an outstanding job working with self-represented litigants, making sure their forms are complete, that their briefing is done, that they understand how to follow an appeal to the commission. And she spends quite a bit of time, both on the phone and in person, with self-represented litigants. I have no way of knowing, but I do not believe that the Superior Court would have the same kind of staffing to provide that kind of assistance. I know that they would provide a certain amount of assistance, but I'm not sure that they would be able to provide the same kind of hands-on assistance that the clerk of the commission provides.
Thank you for those comments. Any questions for Ms. Ford while she's online? Seeing none, thank you for calling in, and I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Okay. We're going to open up public comment at this time on the bill. So public comment is... Do we have anybody signed up in the room, Cody? We have... seems like we've only got one signed up for public testimony, and that's Mr. Croft in Anchorage.
Hello, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Can you hear me?
Yes, just put yourself on the record, please, and give us your testimony.
My name is Eric Croft, and I'll be brief. I know you got a lot of bills to consider. I compiled this morning in preparation for this the number of public decisions by the commission. I was in the legislature when we passed the commission, was an opponent of it then, and then I did some other things, but have been for the last couple of years practicing in workers' compensation and been before the commission a number of times. But mainly just wanted to make the point, and I'll send the backup materials for the committee through sponsor Wilikowski, but I just added up all the decisions, the number of decisions the commission has issued. And it's not their fault, right? I appear before Chair Ford. I think she does a good job, but there's just not that many of these. The court system said 30 to 40 they anticipated. The numbers I have are that the average since its inception, it's been around for about 14 years, has been under 20 published decisions a year. And really in the first 7 years, the first half of those 14, it was about 25. It's been about 14 decisions a year or about one decision a month for the last 7 years. And as I said, I'll send that to the committee. Whatever the merits that were thought to have come from it, there just isn't the burden of work, the amount of work, to justify this nearly $500,000 expenditure. As a comparison, I just totaled the number that we also have a criminal court of appeals, a three-member, like the commission, criminal court of appeals that handles criminal appeal cases, and it handles about 220 cases a year. I just totaled up the last half a year, 6 months, and then doubled it. But over 200, so it's 19 or 20 cases, decisions a month out of the three-member criminal court of appeals, and about one to two decisions a month out of the appeals commission. I'll send that along, but. We can, I guess, get into a debate about what was intended in 2005. Again, I was there, but I don't think it's particularly relevant to it. We've had 14 years of experience, and we just haven't had the caseload in this area to justify, in my opinion, this expenditure of money. And that's all I had. And like I said, I'll send the numerical backup so people can check my numbers. The court system used 30 to 40. We haven't had the very first year that it was, well, the second year it was up, 2007. It came in November of 2005, had a full year in 2006, and then its second year in 2007, there were 42 cases. It went down to 30, 31, and then it has been below 20 every year since, and an average in the last seven of about 14. So that is all I had. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Croft, for calling in. I would, if it's the committee's will, I'd like to go to their fiscal note. And I We do have the Department of Labor here, and I'd just like Hannah Ledger to walk us through how these DGF WISCA funds work, if that's okay with the committee. All right. Next up is Hannah Ledger. Hannah, are you there?
I am online. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Hannah Lager. I am the Administrative Services Director for the Department of Labor. We can just run through the fiscal note. You'll see in our current FY 2021 governor's request, we have $425,900 for the Workers' Compensation Appeals Commission. The change that we would see in FY 2021 would be half of that because of the 12/31/2020 sunset date for the Appeals Commission. And then in FY 22 and forward, we would see that full amount removed from the budget. That would include the deletion of the two positions associated with this component and the Worker Safety Compensation Administration account authority associated with that.
Okay, well, thank you for that, Cook. I want you to go a little deeper. And where does the funds come from? How are they arrived at? Can you walk us through the mechanics of that?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I can at a high level. So the Worker Safety Compensation Administration account consists of receipts paid in by employers into the fund. There's a 2.9% premium that's paid into the fund, and then there's also 2.5% that's paid in on insurance premiums into the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development Division of Insurance. That's transferred over to the fund every year.
Okay, so now we've identified the funding stream and how it works. And I believe it was 2 years ago that we upped the multiplier on the funds for the premium to continue because we were getting a little short funded down there on cash at the department. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that is my understanding as well. That predates my time at the department, but I do believe it was raised a few years ago. I know we are still closely monitoring the fund sufficiency, and we do anticipate having some issues a couple years out, but not this year.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Any questions from committee members? Ms. How'd you say that again? I said it wrong. I was calling you Ledger, and I think you said Lager.
Lager.
Okay, you were very close. It's Lager.
All right. Well, I spell Lager L-O-G-G-E-R, but that's I just went to the 12th grade, so. All right. Any questions from the Department of Labor on funding? We understand how the funding works now. Comes off the premiums that is paid in by the employers. All right. All right, thank you. Hannah, you did a good job. And any questions at this point? We've closed public testimony. It's still open. I think I'm gonna leave it open for now. Does anybody want to? Hadn't had the senator prep to come up this afternoon. We're going to set the bill aside, but does anybody have a question? If the senator wants to come up and he's here, we want to ask him anything right at the moment. Do you have Bill, Senator Wilkowski, come to the table with your staff, please?
Please. Sorry, for the record, Bill Wilkowski, State Senator representing East Anchorage and Jay Bear.
And your aide is?
Mr. Chairman, I'm David Dunsmore, staff to Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. Senator Stevens.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to have it clarified here, Senator Wilkowski, on the time it takes to get through the entire process. And I remember you were saying that going to this, your bill, it would be a quicker process. I heard from Ms. Ford that they only have 90 days to make a decision, but I assume the 12 months we were talking about is all the appeal process. So could you run us through again how this would save time?
Thank you, Senator Stevens, through the chair. So what happens is someone would get a decision. Well, there's a decision issued by the Workers' Compensation Board, and then one of the parties might choose to appeal, and it's a very small percentage. And just to maybe clarify that issue, if I could, Mr. Chairman, you do have a table that we received from Legislative Research Services, which indicates the number of cases filed and the number of published decisions, and that maybe gives you a little clarity. The number of cases filed in 2012 was 29, and 2013 was 26, and 2014 was 30, 2015, 31, 2016, 20, 2017, 26, 2018, 26. But then the number of decisions that are actually issued, because the parties may settle the cases, the most number of published decisions since 2010 has been 18. In 2010, it was 18. 2011, 13, 16, 17, 15, 10, 10, and then 14 in 2018. So that maybe a little bit of a discrepancy there. There has not been more than 30. Well, there was 30 cases filed in 2014, 31 in 2015, but only roughly half of those resulted in published decisions because parties settle the cases. Some of those published decisions might deal with attorney's fees or other issues. So that maybe clarifies that dispute a little bit. Now, as far as the time frame on these, so a party would file a case, and then the appeals commission has 90 days, I believe, and then that's what Ms. Ford said, and then the Superior Court has, I think, 6 months. What I provided to you the other day was based on the testimony that we heard from back in 2005, and the testimony that we heard from multiple sources was that the average, and I'm happy to provide you with those, Mr. Chairman, if you like, the average time that it took for the Superior Court back in 2005 to decide a case was anywhere from 7 months to 18 months. According to the most recent report that came out from the 2018 report that came out from the Workers' Compensation Appeals Commission, they were taking an average of 371 days from the date that a person files to the date that they get their decision. So that's a little more than a year, a little more than 12 months. So you heard testimony from the court system that the average for agency appeals is 12 to 18 months. I have no reason to dispute that. The number that I provided you was a number that we heard back in 2005. And that's because I don't know that they kept records, but that was just sort of the testimony that you heard from a number of attorneys back then. Agency appeals, I don't know that they actually keep statistical records. I think that's probably more of an estimation. But at least in 2005, the testimony was, it was anywhere from 7 months to 18 months.
Thank you.
Senator Stevens?
Oh, that's fine. Thank you. Appreciate that. Mr. Brebeck?
Thank you. Did you want to make a comment, sir?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. More on Senator Stevens' question. One of the other ways this will speed up through the overall process is looking at the number of cases that are being appealed. It looks like throughout the history of the commission, it's about 50% of the cases have been appealed. In the recent years, it's been substantially higher, and the majority of cases or of decisions get appealed to the Supreme Court. The record from 2005, when the commission was originally created, showed that only 25% of cases were being appealed from the Superior Court to the Supreme Court. So in that delta of the difference between how many cases would not be going to the Supreme Court, at least from past history, would show that those cases would be getting a final resolution faster because, for whatever reason, the parties did not take them to the Supreme Court.
Now you're getting into the meat of why we're talking about the bill.
Actually, I'm glad that's why we have staff here.
Am I right, sir?
No, and Mr. Chairman, that's actually, thank you for, and I had that note written down, and I appreciate you reminding me that. That was the testimony back in 2005, that roughly 25% of the cases that went to the Superior Court ended up going to the Supreme Court. And you can look at in that chart that you have as well. In 2010, for example, 2011, you had 13 published decisions. Every single one was appealed to the Supreme Court. In 2012, you had 16 published decisions. 15 were appealed to the Supreme Court. In 2013, you had 17 decisions. 11 were appealed to the Supreme Court. In 2014, you had 15 decisions. 12 were appealed to the Supreme Court. So you have a very high percentage that have been appealed to the Supreme Court. Obviously, some years more than less years. But, when you talk about court resources, you have five members of the Supreme Court. Each one of them has to prep for these cases. And it does certainly add time on to the total length that it would take to resolve these matters.
Thank you. Any other questions for committee members this afternoon? Seeing none, Senator Wilkowski, thanks for coming up. Mr. Dunsmore, thank you. And we're just going to set this bill aside. We're going to have continue to have some more conversation about this topic. And this will conclude our meeting today unless somebody else has something they want to say before we gavel out of here. Seeing nothing, our next meeting schedule is Tuesday, February 4th. That's going to be SB 157. It's a licensure bill. It's a governor's bill. And next Thursday, February 6th, we're going to have SB 47, physical therapist, occupation therapist bill by Senator Giesel. I want to thank everybody for attending today and the testimony, both online and those that came into the room today. And all my committee members, thanks for coming this afternoon. We are adjourned at 2:13.